Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Black Friday has officially started at Blinds.com, and the savings are huge. Right now, you can save up to 50% site-wide and score premium doorbusters and a free professional measure. Don't wait. These deals are happening right now. Swapping out old blinds for custom window coverings is a small project with big results, and Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. With Blinds.com, there are no long lines or confusing quotes. You shop online without sacrificing quality, style, or service. One of our design experts can help you make the perfect selection on your schedule. We can even handle everything from measure to install. Plus, you get window treatments for your whole home installed for just one low cost. With over 25 million windows covered, Blinds.com is the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Blinds.com's Black Friday sales event is happening now with our best deals of the season. Save up to 50% site-wide and score premium doorbusters and a free professional measure at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Well, it is Bob Pompeiani, but it is not Joe Starkey sitting across from him. And, Pomp, I hate to disappoint you, but it's Donnie Football and Bob Pompeiani with you.
No, I'm looking forward to Donnie Football. This is my my first voyage with Donnie Football. And I'm looking forward to it, Donnie.
I am, too. I mean, I say all the time, Pomp, you are on the Pittsburgh sports media, Mount Rushmore, and you're shaking your head over there. You know it's true.
No, I'm not. I appreciate that, and anything that like that that people say, it makes me feel honored. But I just do my job. I try to do the best I can and still have fun. And if you have fun at your job, you can do it for a long time, I think.
And you're pulling a double dip today because Mike Tomlin talking a little bit later than usual, 2:30, yeah. The press conference, which you always host.
Yeah, that's coming up today, later than usual, because I think they had a practice today. Yesterday, they normally have a practice on Mondays, but for whatever reason, that changed. And so he pushed everything back.
Do you think that's a Thanksgiving week thing, or do you think it's a not-so-happy-about-what-happened-last-week thing?
I don't think it's that at all. I think they did a lot of stuff with film taping, all the breakdowns yesterday, that's for sure. And I think that just took over that day, and they decided, because of all this extra time they had off, to just flip-flop and make this a practice day, which normally it is not.
Off the top, that is presented by JP Roofing and Siding. Some of the stuff coming up today. We're going to react to the game last night because it certainly ties into what the Steelers are trying to accomplish. The Ravens beating the Chargers. John Harbaugh versus Jim Harbaugh, if you didn't hear it, mentioned about 50 times on the broadcast. Brian Batko from the Post-Gazette can't join us at the usual time he does on Tuesdays due to Mike Tomlin talking a little bit later, but Brian will join us in about 25 minutes from now. We'll get into the discussion about the Steelers and Russell Wilson, maybe a little bit about George Pickens. I also want to get Bob's take on some of these tip-off tournaments around college basketball, and specifically the one that the Pitt was in over the weekend. Maybe getting to some Penguins as well, because they are off to a disaster of a start.
And they
start.
Made a trade yesterday. Not the kind of trade that I think is going to make a difference.
Right.
But they made a trade.
But this from Jason Lockenfora. He joined Adam Crowley a little bit ago. So I do want to spend a few minutes on this, Bob. He said that some people inside the Steelers organization are very unhappy with Arthur Smith's play calling Thursday night in Cleveland. He also made mention that they weren't happy about the usage of Justin Fields, specifically, I think, the last usage of Justin Fields in that game, where he threw a pass, a deep pass on like third and short.
Yeah.
See, here's the thing, and Crowley had the same or a similar take on this. I feel like with the way the Steelers do business, and you would know certainly better than Austin and I would know. Austin, city limits behind the glass,
as always, this morning. Tight sweatshirt hoodie. I mean, tight.
But.
Yeah, typically my hoodies are a lot bigger.
But I feel like with the way the Steelers do things, it's not like Arthur Smith is pulling this right under Mike Tomlin's nose on Thursday. Like, are you telling me that Mike Tomlin wouldn't have given the okay on putting Justin Fields out there? Like, that doesn't seem to add up to me. And plus, the comment about the play calling is like, okay, well, he didn't call a good game. Like, that was his worst game as Steelers OC. But overall, I don't think he's done a bad job this season.
No, I think some of the problems that normally exist still exist. I keep harping on the middle of the field. I think they could utilize that part of the field a lot more. I'd like to know who is unhappy, according to Jason's report. I mean, I don't know where that comes from or who it may be. I'm sure they're all unhappy with everything in that game. They should be unhappy that their defense gave up winning points when they had the lead after coming back from that. You know, there are a lot of things not to like about it, but, honestly, I think most people, not me, because I thought they would buck this trend. I thought there was so much on the line that they were going to win that game at 8-2, knowing that they get extra days off. 9-2 puts pressure on the Ravens, and if they should have lost last night, they'd have 5 losses, and now all of a sudden that lead is big. That's how much was on stake in that. But they didn't do it. They didn't win it, and I was surprised, just because I don't think Cleveland's very good. I agree with George Pickens, although I can say that he shouldn't. But, you know, there were a lot of things out there I didn't. I think they're trying to force Justin Fields, Donnie, into this, sometimes at a rate that doesn't make sense. I'm to the point now where I want to see him in a specialized package and not much more than that. I still think Russell Wilson's their best choice and best means of operating this offense as far as the pass game is concerned. He seems to light up in bigger situations, and I would not take the ball out of his hands to give it to Justin Fields for that reason.
It felt disjointed, and it sounded like, based on what Russell Wilson said after the game, it was when Justin Fields would come in, it was like neither guy had an idea that was happening. So it's almost like, I mean, you see high school teams. I mean, I've seen plenty this season. You see high school teams operate things like that more smoothly, where they sub guys in and out, because it seemed like they were very disorganized. And I get, you know, short week, whatever, but that's stuff that they should have down at this point in the season. But then Russell Wilson says after the game how, like, neither he or Justin really had an idea of who was going to be in certain situations. And that sets everybody kind of off kilter a little bit. The first play Justin Fields was supposed to be in, they get a penalty. So that's part of it, right?
The confusion or the a new cadence call or somebody in there.
Yep.
Especially that 4th-and-2 play. That's another one, because I think the clock was running down. They had to get the play off. They were a little bit unsure maybe of what they were going to do. And I thought Justin Fields went the wrong way, or something was not right on that play. So to your point, that's one of the risks you run when you do that.
Yeah, I feel like they have to get that down. You can't be more disorganized or how it looked than it was on Thursday night. But I do still like the idea of getting Fields out there for a few plays. But to what you said, they can't really get to a point where if it feels forced, then that's not going to be good. And I feel like they kind of forced him throwing the football in a couple of situations to just show the defense, oh, he'll still throw it, because teams are going to assume when this guy comes out here, he's going to run the football or it's going to be an RPO.
Mm-hmm.
and it's usually going to be somebody with the football on the ground. It's either going to be Fields or Najee Harris or Jaylen Warren, but they threw in a couple of situations there with Fields, and we don't know how much control they give the player in that situation, but I don't know. I'm hard-pressed to think that on a third and relatively short late in the game with a chance to ice it after you were down all game that Justin Fields, of all people, decided, I'm going to throw a moon ball here. I'm just going to throw one up, and it's going to stop the clock. Cleveland won't have to use a timeout. I have a hard time thinking that he was the one that made that decision.
Yeah, I do too. But, again, that's the wrong choice at that time. If you're trying to show somebody that, look, he's in there not just because he could run, this is the wrong time to prove that point. That's a too big of a down to do it on. I just think that maybe the pendulum went a little too far with Justin Fields' usage, and I think it has to come back a little. Again, I'm not saying he shouldn't be on the field. In fact, there are times I'd like to see them both on the field with him lined up in some different position, just if for no other reason, to make them think he may get the ball. What do we do here? And it could, you know, mess around with your defensive signal call. So, to me, that was a problem, but there were a lot of problems in that game, Donnie. There really were. They started slowly again, couldn't get in, you know, down deep. They can't do anything. I didn't like the 58-yard field goal. I do like Chris Boswell from 58. That doesn't mean, but on that situation with the wind howling the way it was.
Yeah, not in those conditions.
That was a tough one because it surrendered field position as well. So there, one punt, it shanked. You know, the guy, Corliss Waitman's done a great job really since he's been here, and that one was the worst possible time for that to happen.
Yeah, and even after a game in which I thought Mike Tomlin had maybe his best performance of the year against the Ravens, because we give him a lot of credit when the defense does well and they bottled up Lamar Jackson again, he comes back with his worst game of the season. I think he would acknowledge that, but that's where I am worried. I guess what I anticipated coming from that game was that there would be such an overreaction to a loss. 4 days after they beat the Baltimore Ravens, who everybody has the consensus that is a Super Bowl contender, a true Super Bowl contender, and they beat that team at full strength, and Lamar Jackson looked like a scrub against the defense. They come back, they lose to the Browns, and now it's, I'm out on Tomlin, they won't win another game. Like, the overreaction is just remarkable to me, to where I'm not going to like guarantee that they win the game on Sunday, but I think people now assume they're just going to get their doors blown off. But
it's overreaction, like you said. That's what, and that's what shows like this are about. People call and vent a little bit because they think, I mean, it's really, it is a week-to-week thing in the NFL, unlike every other sport where we have games every night and you could have the other one sort of fade into the history books because you played another game the next day and the next day and the next day. This is not the case. So every game is big. I like it that way. That's why it's an attractive sport, because they're all meaningful games, which again is my point. That was a meaningful game. They should never lose to that team. And I don't think that team is very well put together, to be honest. I don't. They have some good players defensively, yes, but 2-8 with Jameis Winston as your quarterback, and not 100% healthy, I don't think, Nick Chubb. And I'm sorry, they're not as talented. Their offensive line, the Steelers should have taken advantage of that. I don't know why they didn't so much. And that's also, to me, an increasing problem. They're not putting enough pressure on quarterbacks. And if you're going to sit back and wait and say, okay, go ahead and try to figure out our zone defense, sometimes you'll get burned that way, especially with elite quarterbacks like the one they're going to face on Sunday.
Yeah, I hope that somebody brings that up today around 2:30 and questions, you know, why aren't we seeing more creative blitz packages?
Blitz.
Because
Minka blitz out of nowhere, or Beanie Bishop blitz, or somebody blitz.
So they did it, from what I recall, only like two or three times against Cleveland, and the two times that I remember, it worked. The first time, Landon Roberts came in pretty delayed, but he laid a good hit on Winston. He got a throw off, but I think it was just an incomplete, you know, pass out in the flat. And then the second time was Patrick Queen, and that led to the like confusion with the, is it intentional grounding? Then it was illegal touching.
And he came in quickly, and that's what happens when you do that. You throw things off.
And they're just, I think, so, I don't want to say content, but it's like, okay, well, we'll just trust that TJ will get it done. Well, he doesn't always. Like, you got double teams. You got guys chip blocking him, whatever. and he'll have a quiet game like that, and look what happens. It leaves you very vulnerable in the back end. Plus, Alex Highsmith wasn't in the game, and he's proving, I think, by injury to be even more valuable than what we had thought. But they have to mix it up there. They have to be more creative when they're coming after the quarterback, no doubt about it.
Yeah, because you want guys to be able to make plays. And sometimes when you force mistakes, a perfect example is what you described, that play with Winston. That should have been grounding. I thought it had, when it happened, I said, there's a flag, it's grounding, lost it down, all this stuff. And then all of a sudden, all the intervention from, I don't know if it's the replay assist, if it's whatever's going on there, and they decided because it hit that offensive lineman or whatever, then it's an illegal touch. That leads to another decision, though. We had this discussion yesterday with Joe, at 4th-and-2 versus 3rd-and-7. Me, personally, I might have gone 4th-and-2. I don't want to give them an extra down. If you give 2 downs knowing where they are, I think that's a little bit more risky, to me at least, than 1 play. And if the, you know they're going to go for it probably on both situations. So what would you have done in that situation?
See, I actually didn't fault Tomlin there for doing that because he was able to move them back. And in the back of your mind there, you're thinking, okay, if we can get a stop here, it goes from 3rd-and-7 to 4th-and-7, or maybe they only get a yard or two. It's 4th-and-6 or 4th-and-5 instead of 4th-and-2. And that was just me, I think, feeling, well, this team has been perfect in short yardage 4th downs all game. They were 4-for-4. So maybe that was almost me living in the fear of, if they have another 4th-and-short, I don't have confidence that the Steelers can stop them there. That was one of the errors by Mike Tomlin, though, that I didn't fully blame him for.
Well, again, I'm not blaming. I just think it's a choice you make, and it didn't work because immediately they left Jerry Jeudy wide open, which is stunning to me how that happens. He was making some plays pretty much all game long, he and Joku, and you know that guy's always going to do it. But anyway, it sets the stage for a very interesting next 2 weeks because they have both Cincinnati and Cleveland, and you know, with Baltimore winning, and that, I'll tell you what, I was impressed with Baltimore. I don't know about you, but I was. I thought, without Roquan Smith, you know, we went into that game in Pittsburgh. A lot of people said, that's a terrible defense. And I think they're making a mistake with Cincinnati saying the same thing. I think Cincinnati has a better defensive unit than you think. I think there are circumstances that dictate what happens in games. You know, they're gambling a lot because they've fallen behind. They come back. It's been a weird year for the Cincinnati Bengals. But I would, you know, you got the NFL's leading sack guy on that team. And then, you know, Joe Burrow, need I say more, he's going to score points. They better be able to keep up with that.
The fan text line, you can hit us up on there as well at 412-928-9370. That's brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Bob, I'm happy you kind of transitioned us there into what happened last night, because that game, it went as I sort of expected it to go, even with the Ravens being shorthanded without one of their best defensive players. I thought that they would bounce back. I feel like that's a moment for them when they get to play in prime time, when Lamar Jackson gets to play in prime time. He will take advantage and remind everybody how good of a player he is. He's going to vault right back into the MVP discussion with that game. So they beat the Chargers 30-23, but it wasn't really that close. It was a 2-score game late, and LA scored. John Harbaugh now 3-0 over Jim Harbaugh, by the way, and that win put the Ravens at 8-4. So now they're just a half game back of the Steelers in the AFC North. But something else I'll take out of that game is that beyond the how the standings look, I don't feel all that differently, I guess, about either of those teams, because, you know, the Steelers always managed to bottle up Lamar Jackson, and, you know, credit to Mike Tomlin and the defense for every time they match up. We knew the Ravens, we didn't have to watch last night to know how explosive the Ravens offense was. And then the Chargers, I think, good team. I don't think team I'm afraid of necessarily. I know when the Steelers played them, Justin Herbert was hurt, and he ended up leaving the game. The Steelers knocked him out of the game in the third quarter. But they still look about the same as what I kind of pictured them. It wasn't – if they would have gone into last night and let's say they beat the Ravens by 2 touchdowns, then I think a lot of people are turning their eyes and thinking, Jim Harbaugh has this team ready for a Super Bowl.
Yeah, they would have been 8-3. But the one thing that, if I'm looking at their team, I'm a little surprised by their defense. I thought their defense coming into 2 weeks ago was a really elite defense. Now, not so much. I think they've been a little bit of exposed for that. I think anytime you deal with a quarterback like Herbert, he's dangerous. He is. And it could be a one-game situation. He gets really hot. Look out. But their defense is not what I thought it might be, at least the last couple of weeks. I think Baltimore is sitting in a really good spot. They have a late bye, which I always, when I look at that situation, I would prefer as late in the season as possible to give me a bye. I know you can't control it based on how the scheduling comes out, but week 14 for them, they're banged up a little bit too, and you give them a bye. I have one game, and that's a big game against Philadelphia, then a bye, then the Giants and the Steelers. You know, if they win the Eagles game, all of a sudden now you're looking at the Giants. They're going to be 10-4 coming in that game with Pittsburgh. So the Steelers better take care of business against both Cincinnati and Cleveland. I even think 1-1's not very good in this situation. I think they got to win both, but I think it's going to be hard on Sunday.
And you think they're going to be getting fresh with a running back who, by league standards, is old. A running back that's 30, but Derrick Henry, he's already been great. He's been, maybe besides Saquon Barkley, right, the best running back in football this year. At the age of 30, you give him a late bye, and then he's all galloped up and ready to go for the playoffs. Like last night, it felt like a ho-hum game for Derrick Henry. He still had 24 for 140. Like,
After contact, too. I mean, he sheds people away, man. He just, you get off my back. You know, runs, swats him away, keeps going. He's capable of doing what Barkley does, which is, and this is saying something because he's older, he can break those 50-yard touchdown runs. He can break an 80-yard touchdown run. Normally, a guy that size, 247, I think he's listed as, you ain't going to run 90 yards and outrace defensive backs, but he can. So that's a tough assignment.
Yeah, he's built and he has the speed unlike really almost any other player that we've seen in the league. I mean, that's just how good I think he is. Now, of course, Steeler fans, given the recency, they'll jump on that because they mostly bottled up Derrick Henry. He fumbled on the second play of the game. Like, they had a game plan for the Ravens to face them defensively, and it certainly worked. But the schedule thing that you bring up there, and it's sometimes harder than we make it seem to look beyond and, you know, project what will really happen, because all of these games, when it comes down to it, like, they are, and I think the Browns game is a good example. You can be a better team in every statistical category. You can have a better position groups all over the field than your opponent, and it just does not matter sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, the Browns game was a good example. We saw the Titans beat the Texans on Sunday. We saw the Cowboys beat the Commanders on Sunday. Like, that those things happen in the NFL, but there has to be some worry with Joe Burrow down the pike here in just a few days, given how he has looked. And you say the Bengals defense better than they get credit for. I'd probably agree, given the history that Lou Anarumo has with those guys. Mm-hmm. And we've seen them play well in big games, playoff games, on the way to a Super Bowl a few years back. So, yeah, are they among the NFL's elite? No, but they're not just going to lie down. Like, that's a defense.
No, they're desperate.
That can still
just
make
as you
plays.
Just said, Don. Donnie, what am I doing, Don? Should I call you Austin?
I'm getting old.
Instead of Austin? No, I can't. No, I got to call him Fred now. All of a sudden, Joe's gone wild.
Bread.
What?
Bread, he called me. How about that, Donnie?
Because of the Wonder Bread, isn't that what he said?
That's what he claimed.
Wonder Twin, Wonder Bread.
No, what was I going to say now? Regarding, what were we talking about? I threw myself off by calling you Don.
The Bengals and their desperation.
Well, that's what I said. You just said about all these teams that won on Sunday. A lot of them are desperate teams. Desperate teams are difficult teams to deal with. Cincinnati's had a year in which I can make an argument that instead of 4-7, they should be 7-4. They have games that have been, I thought, taken away from them. The Kansas City game was one they should have won. It was a mm-hmm. terrible call, or at least one I didn't think was worthy of a call. They called on P.I., Mahomes somehow escapes there. And there have been others that they're very much in game. So I don't look at them as a 4-7 football team, and neither should the Steelers. I don't think they will. I think they realize what they're dealing with here with Burrow and Chase and all the weapons they have. So that's a big game. A desperate team is a dangerous team. Now, I happen to think Cleveland's going to get their butts handed to them the next time they come here.
Yeah, see, that's one where I don't want to get out over my skis, but I do think when I heard people say, I don't think the Steelers will win another game, it's like, well, I do think they're going to get the Browns the second time around.
Oh, they'll get them good, I think.
I think they're going to make sure that they don't look past that one again.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
I'm Tank Sinatra.
And I'm Investigator Slater.
And together we co-host a podcast called Psychopedia, which is a true crime podcast infused with comedy, making it a crimedy. Each week, Investigator Slater brings us a wild and thoroughly researched true crime case. I'm here to digest it all and react just like you probably are right there on the other side of the microphone.
Somehow, I've got to present each case with the detail and respect it deserves, while also cracking up at Tank's perfectly timed humor and thought-provoking questions.
Listen to and follow Psychopedia on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen to the Starkey Show every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Contests run every Wednesday through Friday at 12 noon at the 937thefan.com contesting page. Donnie Football, Bob Pompeiani with you this morning. Joe Starkey with a day off around the Thanksgiving holiday. Pomp with us for half the show, the Mike Tomlin press conference a little bit later than usual. So that will start around 2:30. Today, and Pomp, as always, will host that.
You can listen to it here. You can also watch it on KDK Plus.
Yes,
the whole thing. So
yeah, they have it on all the social channels too. If you can't find a way to watch it, then I don't know. I think you're just making excuses because it's all over the place.
So we got a call.
There's
yesterday.
So many different ways to watch it.
This is funny.
Or hear it.
We got a call yesterday from someone who wanted to know, when do the Steelers take on the Browns in Cleveland? Is that this coming? And I said
yesterday.
What? You mean Pittsburgh? No, the one in Cleveland. When's that coming? I said, what? You mean Pittsburgh? No.
Oh, boy. Fan Hotline, that's presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. That is where we find Steelers reporter Brian Batko.
You need some Batman
from
music
the
here.
Post-Gazette.
Batman.
You guys normally play Batman music
do
for
you?
Him?
No.
Oh, come on.
We need
Sorry,
to find
Brian.
Some theme,
he needs
theme
Batman.
Music.
I mean, I know the Everybody Loves Raymond intro. That gets played for Ray.
I think Batman's a good one.
Brian, would you like some Batman music? We can make Joe work that into his contract.
You know what, guys? I think when I first got on the Steelers beat, and Mr. Adam Crowley used to have me on his show on a previous stop in his illustrious career, I think he played that. So he kind of beat you guys to the punch, I'm not going to lie.
Now, would you see yourself more as an Adam West Batman, a Michael Keaton Batman, or a Christian Bale Batman? Or maybe even, who played him in the last one, Robert Pattinson?
Yes. I didn't like that choice.
Ben Affleck's played him, right?
Yeah, I think Affleck did. How about the one that George Clooney was in back in the 90s?
I didn't know he was in one.
Batman,
you know what?
Batman
I am
and Robin.
I'm partial to the Christian Bale Batman. I think The Dark Knight with Heath Ledger, RIP, as the Joker is my favorite superhero movie, and I haven't seen a ton of them. But Yeah, that movie. One's awesome. My son loves superheroes, and I don't even know that much about the movies, but that one's a classic.
Well, you're a superhero to your son. That's all that matters.
Thank you, Bob.
You're welcome, Batman.
Will the Steelers have a superhero on Sunday, Brian, in Cincinnati?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm worried about, for their sake, I'm worried about Joe Burrow putting on his cape, because it's easy to forget, guys. They didn't face him at all last year. It has been a long time since they faced Joe Cool. They got Jake Browning twice last year, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes.
So, he picked them apart last time he played them in 22. The time before that, they wreaked havoc on him in that season opener. So this has been, I think, a little difficult for me to call this early in the week. The Bengals' defense is terrible, and their offense is explosive. I don't know what to make of the Steelers after that loss Thursday night in Cleveland.
Well, you say the Bengals' defense is horrible. I'm terrible. I'm not of the belief that they're that terrible. I think we all came to that conclusion about Baltimore's run defense when they came here, and they pretty much shut down the Steelers. I think they're still. You know, we saw Malik Hamilton last night just go on a stage and make plays after plays. There are guys there who can. To your point, though, Brian, I think the number one issue is what they do with Joe Burrow, because they didn't see him last year at all. And, you know, he's capable, and I would grant you that he's probably going to score in the 20s against I don't care who they play. So the question would be, can the Steelers keep pace with that?
Yeah, and Ja'Marr Chase leading the NFL in receiving. So, I mean, he's been a problem after a little bit of a slow start, I know, because I have him on my fantasy team. And Chase was running through the Ravens secondary. He made them look worse than they probably are. I think, as you mentioned, Bob, over these last two games, we were all discounting what they were going to do in their pass defense. And the Steelers didn't exactly slice through them. They didn't even score a touchdown in that game. So the Bengals, they are a team with some talented names on defense. Trey Hendrickson leading the league in sacks, and Sam Hubbard is no slouch on the other side, although he only has two this year for some reason. Mike Hilton is still playing at a high level from what I can tell as their slot cornerback, but it seems like their safeties and then the outside corners have been a little bit more of their bugaboo, and that could align well with Russell Wilson and throwing that deep ball for the Steelers. It's been a little boom or bust lately, but the Bengals have been giving up a lot of booms.
Brian, given how Joey Porter Jr. has had a Jekyll and Hyde sort of season, not so great against Terry McLaurin in Washington. He had a really good game, I thought one of his best games, against Baltimore, and then not so great against Cleveland. You got to have some concerns with him, I feel, against Cincinnati, given what they have from multiple receiver positions.
Yeah, and he's risen to the occasion in the past to take on Ja'Marr Chase last year. I mean, that game down there in Cincinnati, he was all over him, and it felt like that was the start of a budding rivalry within this division. Because, I know there's some contractual strife, but I think Ja'Marr Chase is going to be in Cincinnati for the long haul. I think they'd be crazy not to. I mean, I'm almost at the point with him and Burrow where I will pay them 98% of the salary cap if I have to, and I'll spread the other 2% around a bunch of random guys and bank on them getting the job done for me more often than not, although the 4-7 record they have at the moment might poke some holes in that. But, yeah, I think Joey is he knows the spotlight's going to be on him in this game. I wonder if, you know, how much the footing was an issue for the defensive players in Cleveland, not to make excuses, but I think it's more difficult for a reactionary position like cornerback than it is for the offensive guys who know where they want to go and can use moves to set you up. So he's got to bounce back in this one and, yeah, try to avoid kind of the up and down ebb and flow that he's been in, but that is sort of the nature of his position.
Brian, one of the things that concerns me about this game is the desperation factor. Anytime you see an NFL team that's kind of backed against the wall, they know this is it. They started horribly at home. They lost some games they should never have, but they almost beat the Chiefs, should have. It was a 26-25 game. They took the Ravens to the wires twice in high-scoring affairs. I think it was 41-38 and 35-34, and they're desperate. Their record really could be better than what it is, even though their defense has given up points. The desperation factor, how dangerous does that make them?
I agree, Bob, and I think sometimes people hand-wave that as, oh, no, I mean, it's the NFL. Everybody is motivated. Everybody wants to win. But, I mean, I was watching the Manning cast last night, and, you know, when it went into the fourth quarter, I guess Ravens were up one. Peyton Manning even said to his brother and Mike Vrabel, I think, was on the broadcast, like, okay, let's see who wants it more out of these two teams coached by the Harbaugh brothers. So I think that is a factor sometimes. And for the Bengals, this is – the playoffs start now for them. They're kind of like the Steelers last year. I mean, it's starting earlier for them than it did for the Steelers. But, yeah, they basically can't afford another loss at 4-7. Their backs are against the wall. And the interesting thing for them, too, is if they do find a way – to hold serve at home against the Steelers, then they can actually go on a nice little run because their schedule lightens up considerably. You know, they've got the Cowboys next in Dallas, but still at Tennessee, but still, and then the Browns at home, and then the Broncos at home. So it's a big game for the Steelers, don't get me wrong, especially with the Ravens winning last night, but this is a humongous season-defining game for the Bengals, and I think that has to worry you if you're a Steeler fan.
Yeah, and I feel like the Bengals, Brian, and you can disagree if you so please, I feel like that's the team that I circle and am saying, please do not let this team make the playoffs.
Yeah, I think they're friskier than the Dolphins. Both of them are kind of hovering on the outside looking in right now with offenses that can be dynamic, but have gone through some issues. I wonder if old Deshaun Elliott's comments the other week lit a fire under the Miami Dolphins. All of a sudden, they're not looking so soft as bleep. They are getting back into the AFC playoff picture ever so slightly. So I'm with you, Donnie. I do not disagree with you. You know, I feel like I've been saying that about the Bengals for weeks, and they keep losing games somehow. So at some point, you are what your record is, but yeah, we all know that they've got the horses. It looks like T. Higgins is getting healthier, and if it's not like they've got a new defensive coordinator like the Ravens. I mean, Lou Anarumo has been there. He's been one of the best defensive play callers in the league at times over the last several years. So it is mystifying that they've been giving up points at this rate, and maybe the bye week will give them a chance to reset some things, figure it out. You know, the Steelers have a little bit less rest, but they shouldn't be quite as banged up, you know, with the mini bye coming off of Cleveland. So it's the stage is set for another big-time 1 p.m. AFC North clash.
Which you can watch live on KDKA-TV with pre- and post-game shows. have to get shameless plugs in when I can. Anyway, we've had
You guys were plugging the Mike Tomlin presser, Bob. Don't you wish they still showed the questioners' faces? Wouldn't that make for a good show?
Yeah, I think that's a good thing because they went to do that in the last couple of years of it before it switched the way that it's been handled. But yeah, I agree with that. You want more airtime, Brian. You're not getting enough. I had you on the show now.
Yeah, we need Batman face out there.
See what Batman's done now. He doesn't need Robin. He's going solo these days. I want to ask you about Justin Fields. We had a, to use your word, frisky conversation here about how he should be used. So we saw it in Cleveland much more so than we had seen it at any point of the season with Russell Wilson as the starter. So what is your perfect mix of using Justin Fields?
I think the needle I would want to thread with that is, you know, you still have to have a feel for the game as a play caller if you're Arthur Smith. So it's difficult to kind of sit there going into it and say, all right, we're going to use him on this down and distance, or we're going to use him at this point, you know, on the third possession or the fourth possession. Like, you've got to kind of take what the defense is giving you, and you've got to get a read on how they're playing you, what's working and what isn't. But I am pretty much ready to scrap the portion of the Steelers playbook that's got Cordarrelle Patterson as your lone wide receiver, Spencer Anderson as a tackle eligible, Mykole Pruitt, Darnell Washington, and Connor Hayward as the other pass catchers in that mix. I mean, I get what Arthur Smith was trying to do. He was trying to get his best blockers out there, but that personnel grouping is, to me, you're actually taking away from the wild card that Fields gives you because, you know, if you don't have a threat downfield like George Pickens was on that fateful third down, and I still think Pickens maybe could have tracked that ball or read that pass better and made a play on it, then I just think you are kind of you're licking the outside of the watermelon with your Fields usage if you do that.
Well, Brian, don't forget about the two-point attempt on Thursday where it was thrown up to Cordarrelle Patterson on an island. What was the thinking
don't
there?
Don't even get me started on that, Donnie. I asked Russell Wilson about that after the game.
Yeah, and he said, we almost had it.
Yeah, he mentioned that Cordero's a Hall of Fame player, which, I mean, yeah, but not for his receiving prowess. Like, yes, if he makes there, it makes it to Canton someday. It'd be because of being the best kick returner in NFL history, not for catching 50-50 balls in the end zone. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that was kind of a take-'em-by-surprise type of deal, but man, I could probably list 10 Steelers I'd rather throw a corner fade to in that spot than 33-year-old Cordarrelle Patterson, and I might even put Justin Fields, Broderick Jones, or T.J. Watt on that list.
I don't think I would argue if you did.
So, I mean, T.J. could be the J.J. caught a touchdown or two in his day, so imagine if T.J. Watt would have gotten to catch a two-point conversion pass on a night that he otherwise didn't get any pressure, didn't get a sack, and then he could have ran right up and stuck the ball in Myles Garrett's chest. That would have been great theater.
So I want to ask you about the running game as it's emerging now. We saw the three-game stretch there, Brian, where I think Najee Harris had made people think, okay, they need to pick up they didn't pick up his option. They need to sign him beyond this year. Then everything's kind of gone the other way a little bit. Where do you think they are with Najee Harris in terms of future planning?
I don't think it's going to happen again next year. I really don't. Even when he was on that streak of three consecutive 100-yard games, I still was not. I know our Joe, who's not with us, who we miss so dearly, was really on the train of bring back Najee. But I was never there because what we were seeing from him, while it was impressive and while it was helping them engineer victory, it wasn't really much different than previous year's Najee. He was his usual self, but he was doing it better. He was doing it more consistently, and he's probably getting a little bit more room to run from his offensive line at that time. It's not like he all of a sudden became a guy who was ripping off 40, 45, 50 yarders. That's never been his game. That club is still not really in his bag. I'm not sure it ever will be. So I think the Steelers knew what they had in him when they made that option decision, and I think they were happy that he was running hard during that stretch, but I don't think it changed their mind on ultimately what the long-term future is for him here, and I think maybe he, too, wouldn't mind a fresh start. The team that I mentioned in my chat the other day when someone asked was the Las Vegas Raiders. We all know Marshawn Lynch was his mentor, another Oakland guy. You know, they still have the same agent and stuff like that. They'll be in a position, I think, to draft a rookie and probably pay a running back. So I think that would be pretty cool if Najee ends up in Vegas next year. I just don't see him back here, guys.
Talking to Steelers reporter Brian Batko from the Post-Gazette at the 50-minute mark on The Fan, which is brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge on Route 19 in Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Brian, we mentioned and joked about T.J. Watt catching touchdown passes a few moments ago, and you brought up how he really didn't get any pressure on Jameis Winston. He really never got close to anything in that game on Thursday night. Not to throw all of the blame on him, but will we start to see maybe more creativity in Steelers blitz packages going forward? Because I felt like they used them so sparingly on Thursday night, but in the few instances they did, it worked. So why go away from that when you have the opportunity?
Yeah, I think we'll see it more as the season progresses. I looked this up yesterday also for my chat because someone asked that, you know, the Pro Football Reference advanced stats on blitzes goes back to 2018, I think, and if the season ended today, it'd be their lowest. It'd be their first time under 25. I think they're at right around 24%. So we know coming into this year that they were pretty confident in their ability to get pressure with only four, especially when those four are T.J. Watt, Alex Highsmith and or Nick Herbig, Cam Hayward and Keanu Benton or Larry Ogunjobi. I mean, I get it. Those guys can win a lot of one-on-one matchups and allow you to drop more in coverage. But, yeah, I mean, right now it's not working for them. And, you know, what you put on tape is one thing. It might be time to get a little bit more exotic. And with TJ specifically, you know, it's easy to say if it's not broke, don't fix it. And it's never really been broke for TJ as long as he's been in the league, and I'm still not necessarily ready to say that it is right now, but why not flip him to the opposite side a little bit more? Why not try some more interior rushes like Myles Garrett got for his third sack? I mean, if TJ's game for it, which I assume he would be, I mean, you go back to that Giants game, they did it once or twice there, and I think it had a big impact on that final strip sack because, yes, while it came from TJ's usual side, they were supposed to get a guy over there, a tight end, to chip him, and Daniel Jones, I guess, was scanning pre-snap for where number 90 was and had a brain fart or something and didn't put his guy in motion, and boom, next thing you know, the Giants' right tackle, Jermaine Illuminor, who was talking a big game all week, got cooked by TJ, and that was the ball game. So, yeah, I mean, I think there are sort of hidden advantages to that, too, and maybe it's time to tinker a little bit more with that.
Well, Brian, all I know is that this is going to be an interesting week. They all are with regard to the AFC North. But, again, I'm looking for Cincinnati to have a response here, and I think when you look at the playoff picture, a lot of people have come to the conclusion that the seven teams that are in position right now are probably the most likely to get to the playoffs, you know, seeding whatever it may be. There are, for me, in the next group, Miami and Cincinnati are intriguing. If they should sneak in, of these two, which do you think has a more likely chance of sneaking in as a wild card team?
I think the Bengals, because of that schedule that I rattled off earlier. I mean, if this is all predicated on them finding a way to beat the Steelers Sunday down there at Paycor Stadium. If they do that, they'll play some teams that are thinking more about Turks and Caicos than the rest of the NFL season right now, and then they'll get a chance at the end of the season to play the Steelers again in Pittsburgh, and you know they would have confidence for beating them once to some extent. So, yeah, I mean, I think the Bengals still have a chance to rise up and make something out of what looked to be a lost season. And if they do that, hey, they've got the quarterback to get it done. They can be dangerous if they make the postseason because of that guy under center. I don't know how many quarterbacks in the league right now are capable of hoisting the Lombardi Trophy, but I do believe he's one of them, even though he hasn't done it yet.
Brian, Diana Russini from The Athletic, this is something that Bob and I will get into in a little bit. She talked about Russell Wilson and the probability of him signing back in Pittsburgh. What is that probability on your scale, and what would be a price and term length that you would be comfortable with?
Oh, man, I just think a lot of this is so premature. I mean, I know this is what we do. I know people want to look ahead to the offseason, especially at the quarterback position, but it's been five games until Thursday night. He hadn't lost a game as the Steelers quarterback. I need to see more out of him to really ballpark either the odds or the type of deal that we'd be looking at. I mean, hey, I guess if he goes 4-1 again down the stretch here, and that would give you a lot of confidence in terms of his play. So, yeah, I mean, I could see it. I could certainly see it. Justin Fields is lingering in there as well. I think they really legitimately did like what they saw from him in the first six games. Not enough to deviate from their original plan, obviously, but it's a little bit different calculus when you hit the reset button and have an off season to work more with him as your potential starter. So I'll humor you, Donnie, and I'll say, I don't know, let's go with 60% Russell Wilson returns. And I do think that at this stage of his career, he wouldn't necessarily hold them over a barrel to try to get every penny. I think he would take a little bit less if this offense and this team is getting more out of him than we saw in Denver. So, I don't know, what about 3 years, $75 million or something like that?
Would Ryan, he take that? Would he take that?
Because he is getting up there.
Do you think he'd take that?
I don't know. I mean, it would depend on how much he's, yeah, trying to extract every dollar and penny from the rest of his NFL career. Or, well, you know, when I hear him talk a lot, and it could just be pontificating, and it could just be kind of the cliche machine running rampant, but sounds like he's somebody who thinks a lot about his legacy. And I think he's also a guy who's right there in the the Hall of Fame conversation, but I don't know if they're asking for his gold jacket measurements just yet. So why not stay somewhere where you feel like you're in a good position to keep putting up numbers, keep winning important games, and strengthening that resume and all of that over going somewhere to be a bridge quarterback again, or you're not sure how you're going to fit in their offense or with their head coach. So that's the only reason why, you know, I'm just kind of spitballing a lower number than probably the market value would suggest for a starting quarterback.
We'll dive a little bit more into that next, Bob. I think we'll have some fun with the idea of the Steelers re-signing Russell Wilson. Brian Batko, Steelers scribe from the Post-Gazette. Brian, in as Chris Berman would say, let me be the first to wish you a happy Thanksgiving. What is the ideal Thanksgiving plate for Brian Batko?
Oh, yeah, turkey with some gravy. I like to mix up the mashed potatoes and corn to get that. To me, is a dangerous 1-2 punch.
Oh,
and then
right.
Some of those sweet rolls. Yeah, some of those sweet rolls on the side. You know, I don't need a whole lot of frills. Maybe add some green beans just so I can pretend I'm eating a little bit healthy.
You just created your own frill by putting the two together.
You didn't.
Come on now. Corn is corn.
I didn't hear stuffing
there. It should not be shared. Huh?
I didn't hear him say stuffing there. No stuffing.
Oh. Yeah, I'll throw some stuffing. Throw some stuffing with some gravy on there. I can't believe you guys don't mix mashed potatoes and corn.
No,
I'll do if it just so happens to happen. I'll do it.
Well, if there's a runover, in other words, you have a lot in your plate.
Yeah,
you my grandmother always just said it ends up
overlap.
In the same place anyway. So what's the difference? But I didn't agree with that. I like to enjoy them separately for what they are. Corn is corn.
Yeah, that was a very condescending no from you, Bob. try it. Just humor me. Try it on Thursday. I gave you guys some Russell Wilson. You know, numbers out of thin air. So the least you can do for me,
that's right.
Mix up your corn and
next time I talk to you, I'll let you know. Okay, I'm going to do that.
Thank you, Brian.
Have a nice Thanksgiving, Brian.
All right, see you, boys. Happy Thanksgiving.
You know what I don't like combining together? I was telling Charlie this last night. I like these things individually. I don't like them combined. I don't like when people mix a lot of stuff with chocolate. Chocolate and peanut butter is fine. Like, I think it's similar enough. I don't like mint chocolate.
Oh, I do.
I don't like anything chocolate with nuts.
I do.
No, thanks. I mean, I'll do, like, the chocolate-covered pretzels. I think those are great. But, like, the easiest way to ruin a brownie, when you put nuts in them. No, thanks. I just want a brownie. I just want all chocolate.
There. I agree with that.
I don't want anything else in there.
Do you like, let me give you a choice here.
But I like peanuts. I like
regular chocolate. Dark chocolate or white chocolate?
Milk chocolate.
Milk.
I go milk chocolate, white chocolate, then dark. I think that's
dark's very good
there.
For you, you know.
Well, see, I know that. My pap used to always just do dark chocolate. He lived to be like 90 years old, so maybe I should do that. Start to do that now, get ahead of myself.
Is that the key to life, Donnie? You passing
be.
Off the industry secrets?
He would go with dark chocolate and some wine.
Well,
I know,
there you go.
I know that's up your alley. Right.
Wine is good for you. It's good for the soul. It's good for every part of you. It keeps you. I'm serious. I believe what my doctors tell me about this stuff. So that's also my excuse to drink it.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.